Well, ladies, if you were in town last week, you probably saw the reports of the major 7-alarm fire that spread within minutes through an apartment complex near Love Field, burning for 6 hours. One man was killed in the fire. Several were injured. About a third of the 300 apartments were damaged. Hundreds of families were dislocated. Many of them had small children, and they lost all of their earthly possessions. As of last Friday, even those in apartments that had not been damaged did not have any electricity or water. Several of the inhabitants of the apartments were injured when they were forced to jump out of second and third story apartment buildings in order to escape this fast-moving fire. Although the investigators have not determined yet the cause of the fire, there's no question that this fire was extremely destructive. And you know, James uses the picture of a fire to show us the power of our words in James 3. So let's begin tonight looking at James 3. We are going to look at the responsibility, the control, the damage, and the fuel for these, what I have called word fires, that James talks about. So if you'll turn with me to James 3, he begins this section with a very interesting verse in James 3:1. He says, "Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, because you know that we will be judged more strictly." And then he goes straight into the issue of the tongue. And so the question is, how do these verses relate? And I know you talked about that some in your groups as well. But I would say that teachers are judged more strictly. He says that first, and then he goes straight into one area of that judgment, and that is our words. And teachers will be judged more strictly for their words. To teach puts you in a position of greater influence. And the greater your influence, the greater your responsibility for what you have to say. So James begins this by talking about this, that the standard is higher for those with more influence because the impact of their words is greater. He says this basically about our responsibility. The greater the damage, the greater the judgment. I looked up in the Texas Penal Code. I was just interested to see what sort of penalties arsonists receive for setting fires. And the penalties range anywhere from a first-degree felony to a third-degree felony. If it's a first-degree felony, the penalty is imprisonment from anywhere from 5 years to life. If it's a second-degree felony, they can be imprisoned for 2 to 20 years. And then the third-degree felony carries a penalty between 2 and 10 years in prison. So what makes the difference? Why are some arsonists put away for life and some arsonists only spend 2 years in prison? The difference is the damage that is done. Those who do more damage are punished more severely. Those who hurt people or who burn down homes or places of worship are given a first-degree felony, whereas those who merely cause damage to other types of building and people are not hurt do not have a severe consequence. And so it's that same idea that because a teacher has more influence, there is this more severe judgment. Those with more influence carry greater weight, and so they have more responsibility for what they have to say. You read Matthew 12:36 and 37 in your lesson where Jesus said, "I tell you that on the day of judgment, people will give an account for every worthless word they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." We are all going to give an account of all the words that we have spoken. This is horrible in my mind. I don't like this at all. I mean, I have said way too many words in my life, and way too many of those words were not good words. They were not profitable words. They were not even nice words in many cases. And then you have to add the fact that I'm a teacher, and so then I have this stricter judgment for it. And this is just really a bad thought. Although Jesus forgives and loves us, and he totally does, we are judged for what we have said and for our other actions. Now, Jesus took the punishment for those actions or those words on the cross. We're not talking about being punished because of our words. That's not what our judgment is about. But Won't it be sad for me to stand before Jesus and hear a rehash of all these words I have said my whole life? I mean, I don't know if it's going to be a DVD or is it just going to be the sound of my words? I mean, how terrible for me to stand before Him and have to listen to all these things that I should never have said in the first place. The things I may have said in anger or in self-righteousness or in bitterness or just thoughtlessly saying some of these words. So I don't think it'll be easy to stand there and listen to those things again and go through the things that I've done and the things that I've left undone in my life. I think if it were easy, these passages would not carry any warnings about that. He's not going to condemn us, though. We will not be punished for these things. And I want to be sure you understand that. In Romans 8, 31 to 39, you may want to follow that with me. We see there will be no condemnation or punishment for this. Paul says here, "What then shall we say about these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? Indeed, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, freely give us all things? Who will bring any charge against God's elect? It is God who justifies. Who is the one who will condemn? Christ is the one who died, and more than that, he was raised, who is at the right hand of God and who also is interceding for us. Who will separate us from the love of Christ? Will trouble or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? As it is written, for your sake we encounter death all day long. We were considered as sheep to be slaughtered. No, in all these things we have complete victory through him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor heavenly rulers, nor things that are present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord." Paul tells us we will not be condemned. We will not be separated from his love. We will not be punished. That's not what our judgment is about. When I think of our judgment, I think of Peter, who denied Jesus 3 times the night before Jesus was killed. Talk about words to regret. Denying Jesus 3 times that he even knew him. And it's interesting, Luke gives us this detail in Luke 22, 60 to 62 of that night when Peter denied knowing Jesus. It says, "At that moment, while he, Peter, was still speaking, a rooster crowed. Then the Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, 'Before a rooster crows today, you will deny me 3 times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. Jesus didn't say anything to him. He didn't condemn him. He said nothing. He looked at him. He turned and looked at him. And I think it was a look of love. When somebody loves you that much to love you despite what you've just done to them, that's when you really regret what you've done. That's when you really sorrow over it. And I think that's what's going to happen with us. Jesus is going to stand there in judgment, looking at us in love, and we're going to be sorry and regret not only the things that we've said, but the things that we've done and the things that we've left undone. He is going to stand there, the one who died for our sins, the one that died that we can overcome the temptation to speak rashly to people and love us. And it will be hard. I expect there to be a lot of sorrow, and I expect there to be a lot of tears. But as Revelation 21:4 tells us, God will wipe away all of our tears. The time will come when the sorrow is over and the regret has passed. Don't you want Jesus to say, "Well done, good and faithful servant," when you stand before him? I do. That's what I want. I don't want to be regretting everything I've done in my life. I want the things that I've done to follow him and to have his spirit live through me to be the main things that come out in my judgment. I want to take not only the words of James, but the rest of the words of this book to heart so that I'm following him and I won't be regretting those things when I stand before him. And I know you feel the same way. That's why you're here. You want to please Him. That's what we want, is to please Jesus. We want to stand before Him and know that He's been pleased with us. And, you know, that's not really the easy or the popular Christian message these days. The popular message is that my faith is all about me. What do I get out of it? But that's not really what the Christian life is about. It's about, how do I please Him? How do I love Him? How do I show that love to Him? So keep in mind that we are responsible for our words, and that the more influence we have over others, the greater our responsibility is. Over what people do you exert influence? If you're a mother, you have great influence over your children, and you will bear greater responsibility for what you say in front of them and to them. What about your coworkers? Are there people you work with whom you're influencing? What do you stand around and talk with them about? Gossip, criticism, complaints? What kind of influence are you leaving behind in those places? You're failing to live in a positive way for Jesus. So as we think about word fires, the more damage we cause through our words and the more influence we have, the more responsible we will be. Next, James talks about the control of word fires. But I'm going to turn back first into James 1:26 and read a verse where he first talks about words in James that we read a couple of weeks ago. If someone thinks he's religious yet does not bridle his tongue and so deceives his heart, his religion is futile. We all know that the bridle, well, I don't know this from experience, but the bridle is what the rider uses to turn the horse's head. I think I only got on a horse one time and it ran away with me. I was so scared I've never been on it again. But I know that that's what you're supposed to do, is that the bridle turns the horse in the direction that the rider wants to go. So in the, as the same way as believers, we're to direct our words to the positive rather than the negative. We are to bridle our tongues to turn it the way that is positive. Ephesians 4:29 talks about how to bridle our tongues. Paul says here, you must let no unwholesome word come out of your mouth, but only what is beneficial for the building up of the one in need, that it may give grace to those who hear. We are to choose to turn our tongues to benefit others, to build up others, to give grace to others, not to say anything that would tear down other people. And then we see again, as we turn back into James 3, that he talks about the control of the tongue here, beginning in verse 2. For we all stumble in many ways. If someone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect individual, able to control the entire body as well. And if we put bits into the mouths of horses to get them to obey us, then we guide... I can't read without my glasses. I've got to read it off my paper. All right, sorry. I've lost my glasses. If we put bits into the mouths of horses to get them to obey us, then we guide their entire bodies. Look at ships too. Though they are so large and driven by harsh winds, they're steered by a tiny rudder wherever the pilot's inclination directs. So too the tongue is a small part of the body, yet it has great pretensions. Think how small a flame sets a huge forest ablaze. James says the hardest thing to control in our lives is our words. It's the most difficult thing to control. And he says this very small part of our body can cause great, great damage to others if it's not controlled. But we can't control our words by our own strength. That's what James tells us. It's impossible to do except by God's grace and strength. So that's really our next principle as we think about controlling these word fires, that it's only done by God's grace and strength. We cannot do it in our own power. The fruit of the Spirit, as you saw in your lesson, produces self-control in us. So the more we rely on God instead of upon ourselves, the closer we walk with Him, the more control we will have over what we say, as well as our other actions. Why is all this so important? It is because that words can cause great damage. There is huge damage that we can do to other people and to ourselves with our words. James 3:6 says this, and the tongue is a fire. The tongue represents the world of wrongdoing among the parts of our bodies. It pollutes the entire body and sets fire to the course of human existence and is set on fire by hell. In other words, our words cause damage to ourselves and destruction to others. And you know, the picture of the fire is such a perfect illustration for the damage that comes from our words. A very small fire can quickly grow out of control and become a raging inferno. The damage that a fire can do can be very, very extensive. Just as last week's fire began somewhere very small in that apartment building and burned down about 100 apartments and people lost all of their possessions, what was small was quickly out of control, causing great destruction. And that's exactly what our words can do. We are responsible for the small little things we say. Once we say them, they go out there and they get out of control sometimes. We can't control it. Once we've said it, it is out of our mouths, and the damage can go on and on and on. I know you've seen the forest fires that are just raging over acres and acres, hundreds or thousands of acres in the forest. Often they just begin with somebody thoughtlessly starting a fire, and that fire spreads and spreads and spreads, and pretty soon thousands of acres are totally destroyed because of that small little fire that began very thoughtlessly. James says that words cause damage to both the speaker and others. When I am damaging others with my words, I'm damaging my own relationship with God and my walk with Him. I'm quenching the work of His Spirit in my life. I'm choosing to speak what I want to say instead of what God would have me say. So it damages our fellowship with God. So we are responsible for the fires that we set with our words and the damage we cause when we aren't controlled by God's Spirit. But what is fueling these fires? That's the next thing that James talks about. You know, right now we have a gas fireplace in our home. And so the higher I turn the gas, the more gas I give it, the bigger the fire grows. It needs fuel. And when I turn the gas off, the fire goes out because there's no fuel to burn. In the same way, our words are fueled by something. Something is creating those words that we're saying. What is it that brings a word fire fuel? Well, it's what is within us, as Jesus says in Matthew 12:33-35, and you read this in your lesson. He says here, make a tree good and its fruit will be good, or make a tree bad and its fruit will be bad, for a tree is known by its fruit. Offspring of vipers, how are you able to say anything good since you're evil? For the mouth speaks from what fills the heart. The good person brings good things out of his good treasury, and the evil person brings evil things out of his evil treasury. In other words, our anger, our frustration, our bitterness, our pride is the fuel that comes out in our words. The fuel comes from within. And James goes on to say that hurtful words are incompatible with the life of God within believers, because that should not be the fuel that we're giving it. In James 3:9-12, he says, with it, speaking of the tongue, we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse people made in God's image. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. These things should not be so, my brothers and sisters. A spring does not pour out fresh water and bitter water from the same opening, does it? Can a fig tree produce olives, my brothers and sisters, or a vine produce figs? Neither can a saltwater spring produce fresh water. Last time we were together, we talked about how believers move forward on a journey in life, and that more and more as we move down that road, we should become more and more like Jesus. So it's not that our words are going to be perfect. It's not that a believer is never going to say the wrong things. But hopefully, as God continues to work in our life, as God continues to use passages like this one in James to mold us into the image of His Son, we more and more say the things that come from God's Spirit working within us. More and more our words begin to sound like what God would have us say rather than what we just want to say to other people. As we desire to please Him and to look to Him and to be like Him, He works in our hearts to develop that self-control and that fruit of a life that wants to please Him. If your speech reveals more anger and hatred than it does the love of God, you need to look into your heart. What is fueling that? Where is your relationship with God? What is really in your heart? The love of God, or is it full of hatred and envy and pride and bitterness against other people and unforgiveness? And that means that really, if we're going to quit having these word fires, we have to look at the fuel. It's not enough to just say, I'm going to quit saying these things. We have to look within. We have to ask God to help us figure out what is inside of us that is creating these words that we're saying to people. Why are we so angry? Is it our pride? Is there bitterness? Is there jealousy? What is fueling these fires? We need to deal with what is within, that anger, that resentment, that hatred that we have, that unforgiveness that's there. We're responsible for these word fires and the destruction that they cause, and we can control them only by the Spirit of God. But I do think that we have to look at the fuel that is causing them within us. Now, these are the general principles that James talks about word fires. But I wanted to give us three very specific things that I think we can do, some of the principles from the scriptures that we can do about these word fires. And so I just revised Smokey the Bear's words and says, only you can prevent word fires. And so what are some very practical things you can do? Yes, we need to follow these other principles. We need to be looking within. But what are some very specific things that we can try to keep at the forefront of our mind to remember? And, you know, all the verses you read in Proverbs, I probably could have a very long list up here. But I started thinking, if this is the hardest thing to control, I think I'll just give us three. If we could just follow these three things, it would make a huge difference in our communication with other people. Have you ever been in a conversation that went wrong? I mean, it just turned the wrong direction, but then it was just like it got worse and worse and worse and worse, and the anger just got worse and worse and worse, and pretty soon you're saying all kinds of things that neither one of you probably even imagined yourself saying to one another. We get angry about something, and then the other person says something, and then we're angrier, and we say more, and then they get angry, and they say more, and the fire just grows and grows and grows. Well, I think if we can keep these principles in mind, maybe we can stop that kind of fire back here earlier in the conversation. So let's keep that in mind. The first thing that I wanted us to think about what comes out of James 1, 19 and 20, which we read several weeks ago. But it's very practical in preventing these fires. He says, let every person be quick to speak, quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger. For human anger does not accomplish God's righteousness. So I think if we speak less and listen more, it will help us prevent these kinds of word fires. Speak less and listen more. And we saw this also in Proverbs 13:3, which says, the one who guards his words guards his life, but whoever is talkative will come to ruin. Just talking all the time, we end up saying things that we should not say. So we should talk less and listen more to other people. Listen more to what they're really saying to us instead of being so quick to talk. The next principle for preventing word fires comes from these same verses in James 1. And that where James says that human anger does not accomplish God's righteousness. So I think the second thing we need to do is never speak when we're angry. Just don't say anything. Because the anger in your heart is a fuel for the wrong kind of fire here. Just don't say anything when you're angry. And, you know, talk about a time when it's hard to control the tongue. For me, I think this is it. If I'm angry, I don't really care I just want to slash the other person to bits with my tongue. I'm trying to do whatever I'm trying to do. Get back at them. I'm trying to win the fight, whatever it is that I'm trying to do. And, you know, often I can hear myself like saying, you shouldn't be saying these things. And you know, it's like that little angel and devil. And then the other, this is all in me though. I'm not blaming anybody but me. And then the other part of me saying, I don't care. I don't care if I shouldn't be saying these things. I'm going to say them. And, you know, I have to very honestly admit that if you had heard many, many of my arguments with my husband, we've been married for 35 years, you would be saying, you cannot teach this Bible study, Kay. Because these were those kinds of arguments. They just get worse and worse and worse and worse. And it's just like neither one of us will stop. We just go on and on and on and on and get angrier and angrier at each other. And it's just not pretty. And I'm not nice. In any way, shape, or form, I'm not nice. And so we don't want that. Instead, I'm hoping that God will bring this to my mind next time this happens, and I will think, don't say anything. You're angry, and it's not going to produce anything good. It's just not. The last principle that can prevent words fires is this: think before you say anything. Think before you say anything. It's that slow to speak of James 1 again. It's Proverbs 12:18, which says, speaking recklessly is like the thrust of a sword, but the words of the wise bring healing. Think before you speak. Reckless words bring destruction instead of healing. We can kill relationships with other people when we don't think before we speak. If we can choose to say words that bring healing instead, it will make a huge difference in preventing these word fires. I think we all probably have people in our lives who are difficult. Somebody who can just sort of set us off. You know, do you have that person? That person that maybe over the course of many years you have had a hard time dealing with them. So now they hardly have to say anything. You are set off and you are upset at that person. I have an extended family member that I have a really hard time with because I just want to say something right away when this person upsets me. And so I am learning to be more proactive, to think before I say anything. In fact, I'm trying to do that way in advance. If I know that I'm going to see this person, if I know I'm going to talk to this person on the phone, I pray, God, help me to have your love for this person. Help me to say words of healing instead of words of destruction. And it's not only that I pray about it, but I also try to think through points of discussion that we may need to have. I need to talk to this person about this subject. How should I broach it? What should I say? Pray through it. Think about it. How will I respond if this person doesn't respond well to me? What can I say that we don't get upset at one another and I end up hurting her feelings? Because that's not really what I want to do, but it's what ends up happening. I have another family member who deals with this same person and gets so, so upset at her, much, much worse than I ever do. And so one time I got some little index cards and I wrote out some very healing comments that she could make if this other person began to upset her, some things that she could respond, some responses that could kind of set some boundaries, but they would be healing. They would not be hurtful responses. And I gave her these index cards and I said, leave these by your phone. And when you get in a phone conversation with her, pull the cards out and read what it says. Don't say anything unless it's written on the card. So you may have to do that, and that's okay. Those you have thought about what you're going to speak in advance. And I think it is extremely helpful to do those things. You know, there's some really bad fires called firestorms, and I read a little bit about those this week. They cause a whole lot of destruction. They're very difficult to put out. And I read this. They are created by the chimney effect. as the heat of the original fire draws in more and more of the surrounding air. So it's like the air is all being pulled into this fire like a chimney. As the updraft mushrooms, it causes these strong, gusty winds that develop around the middle of this fire with tremendous turbulence around it. And it causes a wind shear. And the wind shear may produce small tornadoes or dust devils, which can also dart around erratically, damage or destroy houses and buildings, and quickly spread the fire to areas outside the central area of the fire. And I thought that's like some of the conversations I've just described to you, that it is just like it grows into such a great fire that it's almost impossible to put out. We don't want to have these kinds of firestorms in our lives, ladies. We don't want our words to create a terrible storm that grows and grows to the point where we can't even put it out. Relationships are totally destroyed by words so often. We want to be proactive, and we want God's Spirit to control our words. We want to remember that we're responsible before God for what we say to others. And we want to remember that He can give us the power to control what we say. We want to remember that it can cause great, great damage to ourselves and other people if we don't let Him control us. And we also need to remember that something is fueling that, and we need to look within to figure out what that is.